it's high towards Taylor. Walsh got there ahead of him though. On care plays it back in again. And no offside. And Taylor has scored. And that surely means it's the Premier League for Swindon Town now.
Hello and welcome to the Washbag Podcast. This is the Swindon Town Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Panks. Today I'm joined by another debutant. We've got Alex Cook.
Hello.
Hello, Alex. How are you?
Not too bad.
Nervous?
Oh, mildly.
Mildly. Okay, excellent. I'm trying to break Paolo's record of how many debutants we can blood in one season. And I've also got a seasoned professional with me as well. So you can fill the role of, I don't know, Simon Ferry, maybe, Vic?
My hair's a little smaller than that.
Well, welcome back, Vic. Anyway,
thank you.
Another thing that I'm taking out of Paolo's book, so don't get too comfortable, is that any poor performances, no matter how... I know this is only your second appearance, but any poor performances, no matter how well you've served, no matter how many appearances you've made, even if you're captain, if you do one thing wrong, you're out! That's it. Disciplinarian.
Well, you describe me as a seasoned professional. Seasoned, yes. We'll see.
Well, at least my agent will be pleased with the fee.
On a related note, let's have a talk about Paul Caddis.
Mm.
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, that's a very good question. And it's always difficult to comment in a situation like this. And I said on the Washbag blog this week that I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And of course I don't know what's happened between Paul Caddis and Paolo Di Canio. Is obviously some sort of falling out, but I'm not going to go on record and say I think either is right, either is wrong, because we just don't know the situation. The one thing you can say is it hasn't affected the results on the pitch, and it hasn't affected the defensive performance. Were we letting in 3 goals per game, then maybe you could say that. But last time I looked, it was 0 goals per game. So I think from that point of view, it hasn't affected what most fans care about, I think, and that's the results on the pitch.
Indeed, and there sort of seems to be two theories that are going on here. One is that Paolo's in the wrong, and that one is that Paul's in the wrong. But as we shouldn't speculate on it, because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. What the facts are is that it looks like Caddis is on his way out, at least for 6 months. What do you think that means for the future, Alex?
I think that means, well, it means Joe De Vera at the moment. If we are looking at Ward, the centre-back, I can't see any particular reason to shift either McCormack out to the right-hand side. We tried it before. It looked very poor. It does not go well there. De Vera's doing okay. He's a decent player. He's got a turn of pace. He's better in the air, he's better at set pieces, attacking set pieces particularly, and defensively. His passing is fine. I went through some stats. It was the LDV game, the final, and his pass completion is up in the 90s, including a number of good long balls into Benson. He looks longer than Caddis ever does, because he doesn't dribble. He made no dribbles in that game. But what he did do is he had, I think, 6 or 7 long balls into Benson, which he could hold up and turn on. It's a different kind of play.
Definitely.
I mean, also, he doesn't dribble, he doesn't anticipate the movement. There was a moment in the Brighton game, Richie turned inside and he backheeled it out, waiting for an overlapping runner to go round him. Obviously, De Vera was 10 yards back from that. There's still not that connection.
And there won't be, because Caddis has that grounding in midfield where he grew up in the Celtic reserves and Scotland under 21s as a right midfielder, and has only really taken a step back in the last few seasons.
I mean, I would say about De Vera, it was noticeable against MK. I don't know whether you noticed this as well, but he did get forward a lot more and actually provided, well, 3 or 4 half decent crosses.
Yes, absolutely.
So whether he's been told to get forward, and to me, he's more of a traditional right back. You know, he's not an overlapping wing back, and I don't think he ever will be. He hasn't got the pace of a Caddis and people like that. But I think you get a very good, solid defender, and there's a lot of height in that Town back four at the moment. And goodness me, how many minutes is it now? 1 goal in 1,723 million, I don't know. I mean, that's a solid defensive performance. And I think what we saw against Chesterfield was an abject lesson to us all as Town fans.
I think also tactically the way Chesterfield was set up, we needed the outlet. We didn't. We had a wider pitch. We had Holmes on one side, but of course there was no width on the other.
No.
What I would say about De Vera going forward is one of the things he does is he looks inside. He looks for an outlet ball. He looks for a pass. He doesn't pass to Richie. Again, looking at the stats, he doesn't pass to Richie that often. What he looks is inside to Ferry. And obviously, we are much stronger in central midfield than we were last year with ball players. Mm. Miller particularly. Navarro, judging on today, wasn't quite there. But Miller's a lovely player with the ball. So again, that ball into the middle isn't the dead ball it used to be. No. That isn't to Rissa and that isn't to Smith.
No, they're a lot more comfortable in possession.
And it might well be, you know, and I keep going back to this. You know, Caddis was magnificent last season and, you know, one of the best captains Swindon have ever had, I think, in terms of that role of driving the team forward when things were going awry. But I think this might also help Richie in many respects because, you know, he doesn't have Caddis there to provide the passes to him. He has to work perhaps a lot harder at providing his own ammunition to get the crosses in. And we've seen two goals from crosses, to be honest.
Yes.
Didn't intentionally mean to be goals, I think. So maybe it might help Richie in the long run. Who knows?
Indeed. I mean, with Caddis, he always knew that there was going to be
there would be a ball
on the outside.
That's right.
And so did the defences towards the end of the League Two campaign last time out. And that's why Rooney had to come in to give an option on the left, really.
Well, so Holmes really came in on the left.
Mm.
Rooney was in and out, and I'm not the greatest fan of Rooney, and it appears that the Canio isn't as well.
No, exactly.
At this point.
So we're recording, listener, in the immediate aftermath of the MK Dons victory, which seems like a good idea because everything's fresh in our mind, but it's also not a good idea because you have to shout at intrepid officials for 90 minutes and we're all a little hoarse, although Vic thought...
I thought the referee was perfectly fine. I mean, if I was an MK Dons fan, I wouldn't be terribly pleased about the sending off. And
no, I thought that was fairly dubious.
Yeah, actually. And I think poor Dean Lewington must hate coming to Swindon. I mean, I can't believe any footballer has had more bad luck at any football ground in the whole world because those who might remember a couple of seasons back, of course, he suffered a terrible head injury. And we were all, I think, anyone who was in the ground at that time, genuinely concerned for him. He thankfully made a very good recovery and lo and behold comes back and then gets sent off. So I can't believe that the Magic Roundabout is a favourite sight of his, to be honest.
It's sort of where the game changed.
Yes, it did. It's the old... I mean, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, I don't want to say it's always difficult to play against 10 men, but it does somehow change the way the game goes, doesn't it?
Let's start with the first half. The first half was a near perfect story arc for a Swindon Town fan. I mean, they dominated from about 15 minutes onwards. The whole game, all the possession, all the territory was in the opposition half. Mm. And that was 11 versus 11. And then you had the seismic event of the sending off of the captain, no less. Mm. And then you score, and then it's half-time. How could it have gone better?
I think it was one of those situations that Di Canio absolutely got the tactics perfect in the first half. I don't think the sending off changed the game. I think the path was set. It was interesting the way that MK was set up. They were set up to play with two central midfielders taking the ball off the back four. What Di Canio did intelligently was he made sure that Collins and Williams and one of the midfielders came forward to sit on those two when they had the ball at the back. MK were very happy to play the ball from the back, but they had no options because they were expecting to go through those two. It was effectively a 4-3-3, really, but they couldn't get the other midfielder in at all and the two wide men were having to come back and protect their fullbacks. So really, there was nowhere for them to go. That's why we were so far at the pitch. We pressed very, very high.
It was so high, wasn't it?
It was incredibly high. It was the complete opposite of the Brighton game when we stood off way, way in our own half, virtually on the edge of our own 18-yard, even though they were playing the same system because the way they played was too predictable. We could see it and we could stop it. So I would think the sending off wasn't the crucial moment because it was just a matter of time.
Mm.
That sounds like it's after the event now, it's not hubris. Mm. So
MK Dons didn't shift their tactics too much aside from sacrificing O'Shea, the striker. They still came out in the second half and had sort of three men up top, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Although there were two wingers either side of a striker.
Mm.
They didn't... they didn't sit back and just accept.
But of course,
it.
The goal just before half time meant that they had it organized. Been 0-0 at half time, of course, their tactics may well have been different in the second. I don't think we should forget they also had quite a bright spell in the first half, where they had what, 4 or 5 corners on the spin, didn't they? And they looked quite lively at that stage. And that was just before Swindon really stepped on the gas and absolutely pummeled them.
But for that 20 minutes from 15 to almost half time, it was all Swindon.
No, we were just sitting there going, come on, for goodness sake, get one. Because you've seen so many games like this where teams have completely dominated and not scored. And then you, even in the 93rd minute, I don't know about you, but I was still fancying MK might just nick an equaliser. It's just one of those games.
Yeah, as the game wore on, I thought, they've got such a physical presence up top with
Jabo Ebiere.
Jabo Ebiere. It just needed a chance for him, like I felt. And when Williams hit the bar as well, you just thought, that was the chance to kind of see it off.
And we saw a collector's item, did we not, when Fodringham had how many saves in the entire game? Probably, well, one, I would think. And that was the one which he spilled, which was an absolute collector's item, because I think he's... I can't remember another goalkeeper whose positioning is so perfect. I just think he's unflappable. He knows where he is. He knows where his goal is. And that's the first time I've ever seen him spill one.
I think a young keeper as well.
Yeah.
That's
unbelievable.
A lot of it had to do perhaps with the conditions.
Yeah, it was raining, etc.
It was very hard conditions.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
And it was a zipping
decent shot.
But I still felt confident that he would get it on the rebound.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, he's... he's potentially... I said this about Brezovan and then probably got that very serious injury, of course. But he is potentially an excellent goalkeeper. I don't know anybody questions that.
Well, I saw in the advertiser this week that the under-21s staff
have
been down
to be. Yeah, got to be, yeah.
So that'd be nice. We have two under-21s.
Yeah, no, he's definitely got to be. I was surprised he wasn't in the Olympic squad, you know. Very surprised, because to me it would have been ideal for that.
Yeah. The only concern I'd say with him is on the high ball into the box. He's not a big man. It's a little bit of a worry. We are playing Stoke on Tuesday. I'll just leave that one there.
I can't go to Stoke because I'm working. But at the end of the day, it's the league, isn't it? I mean, cup runs are great, as we saw last year, beating Wigan and all that. It's fantastic. Then we go to Leicester. And we could have picked up one or two very serious injuries there with one or two tackles. So they're great cut runs, but at the end of the day, your 3 points on a Saturday, or indeed next Sunday, is really what counts.
Indeed, and that's two on the bounce now. Vic, you were the only one of us to travel up to Hartlepool.
Yes.
Can you take us through how Hartlepool thrashed from the 0-0?
Apparently it was a terrible performance by the town, who were never at the races, and they just were awful all afternoon. I still shake my head at that assessment. I mean, to me, you know, it's a long way to go, but it's an away point. You don't concede a goal on the opening day of the season. And also, let's not forget the Tommy Miller penalty. Sorry, Tommy, the ball's still rising. You know, it could have been 3 points. What a great start to the campaign. You know, I'm sorry, but... that's it, you know.
Mini rant alert warning. I was so looking forward to the start of the new season, and by about 6:30, I stupidly listened to 6:06 on Radio 5 Live, which is my own stupid fault. But there were people on there calling for Rodgers to be sacked, and then I had a look at the comments on the Adver's website, and somebody was suggesting on there that Tommy Miller had missed on purpose because he was a former player. And if you are that person and you're listening to this, are banned from listening to this podcast.
The point is this, I just think if you didn't go, right, I mean, you're perfectly entitled to your opinion. I've nothing problem, but you cannot go on there and slag personal performances if you did not go to the game. How can you do that? And you know, in a previous existence, I'd done a few radio commentaries, and
we shared the mic.
We did. When we listen to 606, you'll forever say, they'll say, did you go to the game? No, I listened on the radio. And you just think, well, much as I'd like to think people would think radio commentary is brilliant, it's not the same as being there. You don't get the same
second-hand, isn't it?
Of course it is. You don't get the same perspective. So, please, if you don't go to the game, just be a little bit more reserved in your comments, I'd say.
They are just so out there, aren't they? It's just absolutes. It's great or rubbish.
Yeah, it's totally. Never... I mean, to me, you know, as somebody who's watched goodness knows how many first games of the season, you know, you'd always take a point away from home. I know Di Canio's a different kettle of fish because he expects perfection in every game, and fair enough, that's his job, you know. And he probably was not very happy with the way they played.
And that's probably what brought that hubris about, wasn't it? It was kind of the vitriol with which Di Canio refused to talk to the media, you know, in the wake of the
He's probably learned a little bit in as much that he doesn't want to go and say something ridiculous. I mean, he has made colourful comments in the past, which we all love, but in a cold light of day, you think, okay.
He probably didn't want to be asked about Caddis as well.
Well, probably not.
Because to let you listeners in on a little secret behind the scenes of the Washbag podcast, when we first decided we were going to do this, we decided on the frequency of once every 2 weeks because, quote, we want to say something every week, and there may not be news every week.
Mm.
Now that decision looks increasingly idiotic as we go on, because since we last
recorded, there's always something.
Since we last recorded, we've had the captain stripped. He's possibly now on his way out. There's a new defender coming in.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Exactly.
We've beaten Brighton.
Yes,
comprehensively.
The favourites for the league,
and we're unbeaten in the league.
So.
I did love Poyet's reaction after that. Well, now we can literally concentrate. Which was great. And I thought he was very gracious about the whole thing. But you saw it, I didn't see it, so...
I saw his comments on the Football League show, and he wasn't that gracious. He was kind of...
I think he calmed down afterwards, didn't he?
Oh, did he? Okay. Well, that's good.
It was actually... The Brighton game was very interesting because, again, it was the total opposite tactically. Brighton... This very good team playing the ball, no forwards, no physical strength. They played Vicente up front, so they couldn't break us down. We dropped off, midfield was deep, backline was deep. They had nowhere to go. They had no pace to go over the top. They couldn't battering ram us. It was clearly a deliberate tactic. So the first half, everyone was saying, oh, what a boring game, what an awful game. But Brighton played exactly as we expected to them, and we could cope with them. Then on the second half, we engaged, moved further up, played at our pace. They had to play our game, and they couldn't quite do it. So
I mean, that's a decent championship team, I think.
Exactly.
I don't think anybody would argue with that.
No, they were missing some of their best players, particularly up front, but they will be a very good team and hope to be.
And I came away from Hartlepool on the long, long journey back, mostly sleeping, but mostly thinking, you know, even though it's a nil-nil, I've nothing but... optimism for the remaining 9 months.
It's a very, very tricky place to go.
Of course it is. There are decent. I mean, the thing is, I think people forget that actually there's another team on the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry about this, but you know, football does not exist of Swindon walking on the pitch and then scoring 12 goals in a game. It does not happen like that. And I think sometimes people.
At least not in League One.
Anyway. No, obviously in League Two is different. But I think in this, you know, you've got they're half a decent team on the pitch. You know, every week in League One. Otherwise. What's the point of them being there? You know?
I think the second half today was a classic example of how a team is down to 10 men. They're still hard to beat.
Yes.
A good side. They were still a decent side.
Of course. Organised, fit, strong, you know.
They looked more of a threat on the break after they'd lost Lewington.
Yes.
Yes, they did. It was... They as you say, they don't have to come out.
Because,
so they can pick their moments.
Well, because in the first half as well, there were so many men behind the ball, and if and when it did break down on the rare occasions for Swindon that it did, there weren't enough people streaming forward for them to be able to capitalise on that.
And not only that, they took Dean Lewington off and they brought on somebody who was bigger. So, you know...
He was big, wasn't he? He was.
So, you know, I think sometimes people just forget that actually, usually there's another 11 players on the pitch, although, all right, obviously today there was only 10, but, you know, you just have to think about that from time to time, don't you?
Anyway, that concludes part one. After you hear some nice folk-tinged music, you'll hear my exclusive chat with Swindon Town legend of old from the early 1990s, the promotion season, right back, Nicky Summerby.
Okay, I'm now joined by Nicky Summerby, who was a legend for Swindon Town in the late 80s and early 90s. Hello, Nick.
Hello, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Good to see Swindon doing very well again.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. We should get it out of the way quickly, whether or not I should call you Nicky or Nick, because I know it's Nick these days, isn't it?
You can call me whatever you want.
All right, Nicky. Okay, great stuff. Let's go back to the start of your distinguished career, if we may, to September 1987. You had a trial with Swindon Town. Now, you grew up in Altrincham, didn't you? So how come you had a trial with a club so far away?
Now, what it was there is I'd obviously had trials at all sorts of clubs, Leicester, Man United, Man City, Norwich, and Cecil Green's. It was like a father figure to my dad. And all of a sudden, there was a trial game going on. He said, "Why don't you come down to Swindon and have, have a trial?" And I was getting to the age when I needed to get an apprenticeship. You know, I just finished school and I need an apprenticeship. So the trial was there, and I went down and took it.
And am I right in saying you scored a hat trick in that game?
We did, yeah. But I was playing centre forward at the time. I used to fancy myself as a centre forward. And I had a good game. It was getting panic stations for me, you see, because that would have said I needed to get a contract. So we won the game, whatever, 8-9-0 or whatever, but I ended up getting an hat trick. So they asked me to come down from there, and it pretty much started my career off.
And as a youngster, you played generally as a centre forward or as a right winger, didn't you?
Yeah, but mainly it was me and Paul Hunt. You know, we started off centre forward probably through the times for the first two years when I was doing my apprenticeship. I was playing as a centre forward with Paul Hunt.
Yeah. So that was the first 2 years, and then you came to sign your first professional deal with Swindon in 1989.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and then they see. I think a few people have pulled me and said they didn't see me making a future at playing centre forward, so they tried me in another role, which was a right midfield, and then it went in further down the line a lot too. Obviously, when Glenn Hoddle came, and when he was playing the sweeper, so it was like the wing back, so I could play as a winger, and obviously had to defend as well. But you know, my time pretty much stopped as a centre forward from then.
Yeah, and it was Glenn Hoddle that first put you in the Swindon starting 11, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. I was in and out of the team. I struggled getting in. Used to come on off the bench, right, because Dave Kerslake was playing, and all of a sudden, when Dave Kerslake got his move, there was an opening for me, and I managed to play regular football from then. Obviously, having a great season and making it to the Premiership, and it's from then's really, really history. If you have a good season in the Premiership, you know you're always going to have an option to move on.
Because that was always the real strength, wasn't it? With that Swindon side, they had Paul Bowden on the left that could always overlap, and you on the right, of course.
Yeah, and then Glenn Hoddle playing as a sweeper with his array of passes and everything. It just worked out. You had Ross McLaren sitting in midfield, Lingy, you know, and it worked out. So he just brought a special way of football, and we all adapted to it, and we all could play it. You know, we had a really good season. All of a sudden, you know, went to the playoff final, and we all know what happened from there. We were in the Premier League.
And where does that squad rank in? Because you played with quite a number of squads throughout the course of your career. Where does that rank in terms of quality?
No, it's up there with it's up there with anyone really. It's because it was a massive part of my career, making it to the Premiership. You know, with a club like Swindon. You know, they haven't got the finances of other clubs, and it was special. You know, it's everyone's dream to play in the Premiership, and you know, in Swindon, that gave me the opportunity. But you know, the array of managers what have been there at the club, it's the most fantastic club. You know, if you look at the managers all throughout the years, Lou McCary, Ozzy Ardiles, Glenn Hoddle, you know, these are all big names, and now you've got Di Canio there as well now, and it's. You know, it was just great when he came over from Monaco. He was still playing himself, Glenn Hoddle, so it was a massive influence when you've got a player like that playing in your team. And we all just gelled in it, and it worked. But it's up there with it. You know, I didn't really have a successful football career with winning trophies and stuff like that. But, you know, when you get a promotion, you get the chance to play at Wembley, and, the result of it is playing in the Premiership. It's, you know, you don't ever forget that.
And it was fairly early on in your career as well to have that first taste of Wembley, I suppose.
It was, yeah. You know, it comes quickly. You know, you put all the work in at the start when you do your apprenticeship, and you're waiting for that opportunity. You know, and it's not just a plain sailing. You know, you get your little bit of knockbacks. We don't make the team. You're in and out, and all of a sudden, it just happens. So, you know, some people are unfortunate to get the opportunity. You look at the boy Lambert, who's playing for Southampton now. He's played in all the divisions, and now eventually he's got his opportunity. So, you never stop believing. But for me, because I was so young, it helped. You see, and with Swindon going down, you know, there was quite a few teams interested because they had a good season.
Yeah, of course, and it wasn't. So we'll go on to the Premiership season in just a minute. But after that playoff victory, it didn't escape the notice of the England under-21s, did it? Because you were called up for the Toulon tournament in France, where you scored your first goal internationally.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was playing in centre midfield when I was there. But there were some big names: Jamie Redknapp, Andy Cole, Chris Sutton. There were so many big names there, and they were all Premiership players. And, you know, I just made it there, but I haven't played in the Premiership. But it worked out for me. We ended up having a really good tournament and going, making it through to the final and winning. So that season really couldn't have got any better. You know, going to Wembley, getting promotion, and then all of a sudden getting a call up for your country, you know, to play, which was special. So it was a very good season for me.
Could you have ever imagined that you would end up with a playoff winners medal and a international tournament medal when that season started?
You don't know, but anything happens in football, as you can tell yourself. It's just, you know, things went right for us, you know, and then all of a sudden, just to cap it off at the end for all the hard work and everything you put in, you end up getting an England cap. So yeah, great.
And when you were in the Premiership, I spoke briefly with this about this with Jan as well. Going from such a successful season to one where week in, week out, there were defeats, how did that affect the dressing room and you as a young man?
Yeah, it's hard because you're not winning, you know, and it's just when you go into the Premiership, you go in there pretty blind because you don't really know much about it. You know about watching it on the telly, but not playing yourself. So your expectation level's through the roof. All of a sudden, when you start off, if you make mistakes in the Premiership, you get punished. You know, and that's what it is there. That is the big difference. You might make a mistake in any of those divisions. You probably get away with it. In the Premiership, any mistakes at all, you get punished. And you learn all the time, but you don't get down-eyed with it because it's coming at you all the time. And you think, well, it'll turn the corner at any minute. And that you just keep going. I don't think we got relegated until about four weeks for the end of the season. So, you know, we managed to pick it up at bits and bobs and had a bit of a chance. But it's what the Premiership's all about. It doesn't take prisoners at all. But it's a massive learning curve, you know, which helped me along in my career further down the line, because it's just the step up is immense. You know, I mean, I think there's more and more teams what I'm making up now seem to be surviving. You know, they seem to be, you know, doing it. But we were one of the first ones to actually make it up into the Premiership. And it was difficult, but, you know, I learned an awful lot about it.
With the new teams coming up into the Premiership, do you think there's something to be said for keeping a squad of players together throughout the leagues? Because we've seen it with Norwich and again with Southampton, that the same players that were playing in League One week in, week out, five or six of a team that Swindon beat two seasons ago that started at Eastlands on Sunday.
Player, what is, you know, if we did that again, you've got to bring people experience to help some of the younger players, you know. I mean, we did try that, you know, there was a lot of play, but it's very difficult. You get a bit of luck sometimes, you get on a bit of a run, you know, it's really luck of the draw. You look at Blackpool, and Blackpool, they started the season off on fire, and all of a sudden at the end they couldn't win at all. You know, and it's very difficult. You could go on a run, and all of a sudden you lose one game, you lose two games. Where's the win going to come from? And you look at you might be playing United, Liverpool, Arsenal, and all of a sudden you're four games in defeat, and you're scratching to try and get it. You can have your confidence, and you can lose your confidence quickly. You know, that's to try and get a victory. It's very hard. So to keep the same team, I don't think that's, you know, it probably works sometimes, but you've got to try and bring somebody in with the experience to help people along, or what's it like to play in the Premiership?
You're a Man City fan, I'm correct in saying.
Yes, I am, yeah.
You are. So was it an easy, I guess it was an easy decision as to where your next move would be when Swindon's relegation was confirmed?
Well, it was, yeah. I was, you know, I'm a Manchester lad, so I was brought up watching Manchester derbies and games like that. You know, what I wanted to do was play in a Manchester derby. Or, you know, I knew what it was like. I knew what everything's about in Manchester, and my opportunity was there. There was Blackburn Rovers, Celtic, Aston Villa. They were interested as well, but there was only, you know, even Brian Robson came to me to sign me at Middlesbrough. But there was only one choice for me. It was Man City, you see. That was what I knew, and that's what I wanted. And when they came, you know, I was very proud of the fact, really, that, you know, Dad was a legend there, and I was going to get my opportunity, and it was, I wouldn't change it at all. It was just perfect for me.
Yeah, of course. And everyone wants to play for their boyhood club, don't they?
Of course they do, yeah. Of course they do. It's like, you know, it's a dream.
When was there a sense of trepidation at all when you scored your first Premier League goal, which of course was against Man City, with a textbook screamer that saw you have the world's hardest shot?
Yeah, well, there used to be the old football magazines, Shoot and Match.
Yeah.
And they were going around all the clubs, and they were doing the hardest shot, the longest throw, you know, etc., all that type of stuff. And it came to Swindon, and I ended up getting the hardest shot and going down on record breakers with Roy Castle. And,
that's right.
You know, and it was a bit of an experience. I mean, you can pick this. They use a speed gun, what they use on the police use on the road, so it didn't pick it up precisely.
Oh, so, right.
You know,
okay.
I mean, now you know they pick how hard the shot's up and everything. Then it wasn't, but mine worked. You see, and end up getting a little bit of a, you know, going down on the telly and getting something out of it. Even though I've tried my hardest to get a clip from it, I can't get a clip or anything now, so no one believes me. But, you know, yeah, of course, it was another experience.
I can vouch for you, Nicky. I saw it as a young boy.
I think I dreamt it.
That was one of the things that a young Swindon fan could brag about at that point. That was about the only thing we had going.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was good to be in the Premiership and to see all those great teams coming to the County Ground week in, week out, and, you know, putting up a good show. We didn't lose to Man United that season either, and I think we were the only team not to do that.
I think, you know, when the Premiership comes to your club, you know, there's that buzz there, and all the cameras are there, and you know that first game of the season, and the training ground, there's a buzz around the training ground with press and everything, and it's just that different league altogether, what you don't get in any other division, and you can feel it. You know, it's a worldwide brand now. It's changed even so much more than when we were playing in it, but as a player, it's a place to play.
After Man City, you went to Sunderland. What brought that move about?
Well, all it was there in a city is, it was okay when in the Premiership, but when the City went down, I wasn't having the best of times. I don't think a lot of the players were, but we went up to play the game at Sunderland, and they just moved into the stadium alike. I wasn't playing, didn't start the season off, and then all of a sudden one day I got a phone call and to say that they wanted to do a swap deal with a lad, Craig Russell. You know, and I knew that my time was really up at City, even though I'd just signed a 3-year deal, and all of a sudden the deal was done, they moved up there, which was, you know, a blessing, really, because it was my time had come to an end. It was, looking back, it was difficult, because you're always going to be compared to your dad. And this gave me the opportunity to get away from that, and, you know, the stadium of life is a wonderful stadium, and the fanatical fans, and they love the football in the North East, and, you know, it's a real special place to play football. Yeah, I hear a lot now that some of these footballers what go to the northeast. The wives don't like it because it's no good for shopping. It's the biggest load of rubbish everywhere. I go and play football down the northeast. It's a special place. They had a reserve team game there once and Liverpool came down. I think a few of the players were there, some of the stars, and they let everyone in free for the kids and everything. There were 29,000 people on a Tuesday night.
Jeez.
That's how they love the football. You see,
that's a special kind of atmosphere, isn't it?
Cool. They just love, you know, they're very passionate about it. You always know if they're happy with a manager up there, because, you know, if they're not happy, they don't come.
Yeah.
And if they are happy, they get behind a team. You look at Newcastle last year, you know, they can make it like a 12th man up there. They can really, really do get behind them, and they're passionate. And that's why it's a special place to play. And when we went there, things were good. You know, they bought Kevin Phillips for $400,000. You know, and we missed out on promotion, but we came back the year after and got one of the highest points, and we just absolutely murdered it. And the place was, people used to come up and play against us, and you just felt the crowd behind you, and it was the real fortress, and it's a special place to play.
Now, you've mentioned your dad, who of course is noted for his performances at Swindon as well as Manchester City, so very much followed in his footsteps. When did you know you were going to be a footballer?
I just love the game, you know. I used to go to the games with Dad and see what the admiration people gave him, you know. And how people used to look after him. And I just love the game. I was always, as a young kid, walking around with a football, and that's what I wanted to do. I wasn't clever at school or anything like that, but I had this belief, and I thought I'd make a footballer. I got a lot of knockbacks, and it wasn't an easy journey to get it. To get there, because it's how you react to your knockbacks. A lot of clubs in Leicester, Norwich, Man City, Man United, they all got rid of me as younger, and I came back and played for Man City and played against the other team. So, I just felt I wasn't going to do anything else, and with a bit of luck, and that's it. And then you get the opportunity. There was nothing. Dad just only supported me. Dad never pushed me into like that, because he couldn't.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to be, when your dad's famous, it's even harder to make a footballer. It's because they come out all the time, you see.
Yeah, and you came back to Swindon for one performance on a non-contract basis back in 2005.
Yeah.
Were you?
That was all it was. There was, I hadn't done a pre-season training at all, and all of a sudden Andy King phoned me up. And I was delighted with it. I thought that's it. I thought wonderful. But I told him the situation. I said I wasn't fit. I said, so you have to get me fit, really. And to me, I was a bit of a no-brainer. It's not hard to get anyone fit. You just work them hard in training for 3-4 weeks, and you're there then, and you play games, and you're very easy to get it. And I played in the game against Forest, which is I was way out, well off the pace, but we won the game.
Yeah.
And then I played in the reserves on the Tuesday. I asked to play in the reserves, and Andy King says, well, you don't really need to. I said, I want to play, and I want to get myself right for it. And I played in this game, not playing so well. And straight after the game, they said, I don't think it's going to work out. And it was just like an absolute disaster, really. It was just, you've got to have... I don't see the point why they took me there, really. And it was just, at the back end of your career, people are saying, do you want it bad enough and all this? And that would have been ideal for me, but... It wasn't, and it was just the start of my career up to Sunderland was good, but after that I ended up being like a bit of a journeyman, really, playing at all clubs everywhere, and it didn't go to plan. But that Swindon one there, I thought I had a really good feeling about it. All I had to do was get me fit. That's all. I wasn't far away because I played in the game, so you've got to make them fit and do extra training and just catch up with everyone. I didn't have the time to do it.
These days, of course, we hear you on the BBC Radio 5 Live. What else are you up to these days, isn't it?
I just work on a lot of media. I do after dinner speaking. I go up and down the country doing that. I work on a lot on the channels, Sky, TalkSport, Sports Tonight I'm doing. There's lots. I like the opposite side. I like interviewing people. I've been an ex-footballer interviewing people. I just came back from the Ukraine, interviewing all the crowds before the games. Love that. I like this media side of it, so it helps as well with the interest with Man City and how well things are going at the moment there. So, I get a lot of work, and I just keep plugging away at that, and I like it and enjoy it.
What do you make of the takeover of Man City? Does it feel like a different club now, or...?
It's run properly now. The owners, obviously, people know about the money and everything, but they came to the club and they spent money to compete at the highest level, and I think they're well ahead of this, of what they've done there with the quality of player and everything. What's there? There's world class footballers there.
And at the opposite end of the financial spectrum, what do you make of Swindon's progress? Do you look out for their results still?
Of course, I do all the time. But they had a few years of doing, nothing was really happening. But I questioned last year when Di Canio came down, the first person to say, I don't think he's really all fit, because you've got to roll your sleeves up when when you're not in the Premiership. And I'm totally wrong with what I've said. He's passionate. He's got promotion and all that lot, and he seems to have really got into this being a manager. He's obviously a character. That is Di Canio, and all that's been from when he's playing. He's passionate and he gets involved with it. And but great. I think the way he comes across, he's put Swindon back on the map, and they want to play for him. But the club looks like he's got a buzz with it, and that's, you know, that's been a long time since they've had that. And, you know, when I said he wasn't going to be the man, I thought he wasn't, but I couldn't have been any further than being wrong, really. And he's proved me wrong, and I think he's really good, and he excites me. And his passion comes out, and that's what you want. It comes out to everyone that's around him. He loves the game of football.
Thank you very much for your time, Nicky. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Just a reminder to everybody that Nicky scored 6 goals over 113 appearances for Swindon Town. Thanks very much, Nicky Summerby. Thanks very much, Nicky.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, bye.
Welcome back. This is part 3 of the Washbag podcast. That was an exclusive chat with Nicky Summerby. Next time, we will have another Swindon legend in the interview booth. Now then, Vic, Nicky was talking there about the importance of keeping a squad together, but also adding to it. So that's kind of, that follows the model that Di Canio has.
Yeah, I think any good manager, we were talking earlier, and I was saying about Graham Taylor when he was manager of Watford. He had a team that won the fourth division, then he would add, you know, bought Steve Sims in from Leicester, I think, for £200,000, which is a massive signing in those days for a third division team. But he just kind of added players for the level that they were going to, having kept some of the players that had done him the job in the fourth division. So you improving it, but keeping the basis. And I think that's fair enough. And then just to briefly go back to the Caddis thing, that's what surprised many people, that, you know, this situation has arisen, having had Caddis lead them to that fantastic triumph last season. So, but Ferry's still there, obviously. Richie is still there. Fodringham is still there. McCormack is still there. So they've got a basis of players that were there last season.
Flint,
obviously, who is getting better and better at League One every week.
He has a great game.
Fantastic. So, you know, those players are there. McCleverley, of course, was there last season. So the basis is there. De Vera as well. And he's added couple of midfield, couple of new strikers. You know, Roberts we haven't seen because of injury, which is a real shame, I think, because he obviously was one of the main characters that he was going to put in the team.
But one thing that we have seen in Roberts' absence...
De Vita
sparkling. Has massively.
Absolutely player of the season, as far as I'm concerned, without question.
I think he needs a blood test. Because he was always a trier. He was always a trier.
And still scored one of the goals of last season at Plymouth.
That's
just a fantastic goal. Yeah.
But he tipped up with that goal and then would go missing for weeks. He was always a trier. He would run, a little bit like Connell. But the final ball was generally missing. Today he had another great game.
I think today the final ball was good, but no one was attacking it. He delivered some very nice balls. He had the fullback, John Semmerball, who's... ex-Liverpool player,
yeah,
completely on toast, and the number 17 Palmer, who was coming back to support him. Then they switched with Bowditch, so he was being double marked often, and each time he was able to turn back and turn inside to put it back on his foot, and he delivered one absolutely beautiful ball. It looked hopeless because it was towards the near post, it was low and flat, and no one went near it. But if someone had gone, it was a beautiful ball for someone to finish. But I think it's confidence. I see the same player last year, hard work, effort, tracking his runners. He does everything you could ever want tactically as a manager. If you look at him, you think, he's doing 90% of what I want.
Yeah.
But he lacks power. He lacks a finish. He's good in the air. But he just had confidence today, and he was able to take a man on at will.
He was trying so many skillful things, and they were all coming off as well.
Well, we were very surprised at Hartlepool that he got taken off, because he was the player, it seemed, that was going to produce something at Hartlepool.
Okay.
He had another fantastic game against Crawley and then gets taken off again. I don't
know
whether
taken off again today.
Yeah, I don't know whether Di Canio brings him off so he gets a great reception or not. I don't know. Because when you get a boost like that, I mean, the crowd love him now, don't they? I mean, he is the man.
I think they always did, but they never sort of disliked him. It was just sort of howls of frustration that he would do all the great stuff first, and then the final ball, it's a bit of a Theo Walcott type player, isn't it, where he'll beat 7 men and then sky the ball past out of the town end.
No,
the substitutions, obviously we need Ron for this point, but he's consistently been taken off around the 70th minute. I think there's a fitness
possibly
issue.
He works
so hard, it looks like he just starts to fade.
Maybe he says go out and run there for 75 minutes and then
give me all you've got.
Absolutely, which is, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Yeah, it's fair enough.
So you mentioned the Crawley game there, so let's have a brief chat about that. it wasn't the same as last year, was it?
Well, Swindon were fantastic. And one player we haven't really mentioned is Ferry, who's been in for the two games, hasn't he? Crawley and MK Dons. I thought MK Dons he was terrific against. And Crawley came back in. He just looks like the Simon Ferry that we all know and love, really. I mean, he just has that, you know, bounciness about his game, and he passes, you know, very, you know, you would know this, Alex. I mean, I don't know what his percentage of passes to a red shirt is, but pretty high.
I did it last year for a couple of games. It was well in the 90s.
Yes, yes. Very rarely does he misplace a pass. And today I noticed there were one or two sliding tackles as well.
Yeah.
So he's adding that to his game. So maybe, you know, there's a bit of that. He's got Miller alongside him, who's the perfect foil, I think.
He's very strong as well for somebody who looks as slight as he does. He's quite short, and it sounds odd, but I looked at his legs today, and his legs are very slim. Mm.
Yeah, he's lost a lot of weight, hasn't he? Yeah, he looks fit right now. And other crowd love him. I mean, he's just bonkers, but they love him, don't they? I mean, who doesn't like Simon Ferry?
I know, he's a great character to have around the club. His link-up play with Richie today was very good as well. As we've seen before, the missing third part of that triangle is, of course, Caddis, but hopefully De Vera can build a level of understanding along the same lines. Williams was unlucky today.
Yes.
Seems to be a recurring...
I saw them in pre-season. I mean, obviously, you were at Salisbury. I saw the Supermarine game and the Forest Green game, and they were... Both of them, Williams and Collins, have had opportunities. Collins, of course, didn't play against Brighton, did he? Because he was away on international duty.
That's right.
They work very hard, really hard, but I don't think either of them, Alex, are 20-goal-a-season strikers, are they?
I would absolutely agree. Williams is a lovely player to watch. He's direct. It's lovely to see a player take a ball with the intention of running on it. He's got good hold-up play as well, but he always has the idea. He knows what's behind him.
Yeah.
He knows that he could go into that space.
Yeah.
He does look very effective. He's got a very nice touch.
I love his touch.
Yes.
Just he can do things that is the opposite of what the defender expects, and it's just really nice to see, isn't it?
I think we saw that
in pre-season, but we didn't know how well he was going to implement that against higher league opposition. And I think that, to make your point for you, Vic, that they're neither 20 goal a season. There was a chance today that Williams had where he went past I can't remember his name, but the replacement, Dean Lewington's replacement, and then fired against the bar.
Yes,
and
we saw a fantastic run, yeah.
Yeah, great run, but he just didn't, he did all the hard work and was unfortunately unable to apply the finish.
We should also...
But then Collins against Crawley.
Yeah.
Collins against Crawley, it was almost like he'd beaten the entire team. It was a bit like you're 16... You're a bit hot at FIFA because you haven't got a girlfriend. And then you're round your mate's house and your little brother fancies himself as a bit of a FIFA player, but he's rubbish. So you're already 8-0 up. You don't want to humiliate him anymore. The only way to humiliate him more is to not score that ninth goal, is to beat his entire team, run back to your goal line, and then beat the team again. And that's what Collins effectively did in my mind, and then missed. He fired it straight at the goalkeeper.
I can't remember, who had the header which produced a fantastic save in the first half from their keeper? It was a wonderful save, which he just tipped over the top of the crossbar.
I think that was Collins.
So that kind of sums it up, really, doesn't it? That you've got a, you know, in front of goal, it just isn't going at the moment.
It might have been Flint, actually.
It may well have been Flint thinking about it, yeah. So it was a wonderful save. But, you know, I think Collins or Williams just need a goal now, don't they?
I would absolutely agree with Collins on. He wasn't quite there. It looked instinctual. The ball would come past him and you go, oh, brilliant, I know what to do, I ran in on goal. But he didn't have the link play. He didn't understand where others were going.
But it was nice to see Miles Storey.
And that's a bit of a youth thing. I think it's nice to see the younger players from Swindon getting a chance.
Absolutely. His pace is still frightening. Even though you saw Williams running around for 90 minutes, Storey tore across the pitch at one point. You think, okay, you've got something there. Yeah. We haven't seen the rest of you.
He's got the confidence as well. He's got the confidence as well to try his little tricks and to try his skill, like we saw with Billy Bowden last year. They're young boys, but they aren't afraid of taking on these players.
Well, I think if you cast your mind back a couple of seasons when he and Billy made their debuts on the same game, was it a 2-0 home defeat when Paul Bowden?
It was under Bowden, yeah.
Manager for a while. I mean, they both looked tremendous. And Miles Story, and the following week they won at Tranmere. And Story was just like, well, we all went, wow, you know, wow. So he's got everything there, and you just hope that he comes through to make it.
Well, it's been given a chance, isn't
Absolutely.
It? Absolutely. Depends what's in front of him, and if anything else is to come in front of him.
And he hasn't been farmed out yet, as Billy was early last season, so.
Well, he's an option, he's something different. He's not, like Collins, he's not a hold-up man. He's not like Benson, who's that little bit more predatory. He's not Williams, he's working the channels.
Yeah.
He looks a little bit more like a direct speed man over the top.
Definitely, yeah. And hopefully he's got that finishing ability as well. Now, somehow the MK Dons fans managed to smuggle a drum into, like the Crawley fans. You do have to say for Crawley, though, the second half, they didn't stop singing for the whole second half, did they? Even, I might add, while we were celebrating the third goal. They were still clapping, they were still singing.
Do you know, I'm going to be honest here, and it spoiled the game for me. And it really did spoil the game, because all I could hear was that infernal drum. And, you know when you get something in your head and it's just there all the time?
Yeah.
Anybody who knows me knows the music of Led Zeppelin has been one of my great passions in life. But whenever I saw them and John Bonham did a drum solo, I'd gone out to the bar. You know, I cannot stand drum solos anyway. And if you're a drummer listening, I apologise. Great normally, but 45-minute drum solos, give it a rest. But the thing is, why? Yeah. Why do we have to have them?
I mean, the Vuvuzelas got banned, didn't they? I would have welcomed a Vuvuzela for the last 10 minutes.
It's just
a plaintive Vuvuzela solo. But I've written on my site, southsounds.co.uk, about how music and sport don't tend to mix. They're my two big passions in life, but they do not mix, because sport is far too mass participation. It's lowest common denominator. I can remember under Wilson and then Hart, the music that we had to motivate the players was Black Eyed Peas and Bryan Adams.
Yeah,
didn't and we finished bottom that season. Now I'm not saying that was all the...
I would say now we've got Kashmir, which is not the Led Zeppelin version, but it is a Led Zeppelin song. So,
yeah.
Hey.
Well, I quite like
says
that.
Says it all.
I like the fact that they've made that change. We can't put it all down to the music. But what I would say is that music and sport just does not... Until a four-piece indie band take the plaudits as though they are lining up in a wall, then no drums are allowed in. And it's because of the Sheffield Wednesday band, isn't it? The England band.
Yeah, the England band, yeah.
And they say that, oh, it motivates the players. As though Wayne Rooney is going to close down that centre-back that little bit more just because he can hear The Great Escape.
I think I'd more like to run into the stand and do something with the drum, quite frankly, if I was at one of the team.
Right, that's music dealt with. Tick. What else have we got to talk about? Let's talk a little bit about what's on the site at the moment. The fifth part of six Fraser Digby in-depth interview went up yesterday, as you're listening to this. I will be attending the Swindon Town Legends charity game against Fairford Town today, as you're listening to this, and I'll have a report on that in the next podcast. You can follow The Washbag on Twitter, at The Washbag. You can follow me if you really want to, at Christopher_EP. Vic is at Swindon Red. And Alex, you are
at STFC only.
Excellent. Anything else you want to plug? Do we have any other business?
I haven't got a new CD at all or anything, so... or a book.
We should mention your show on BBC Devon, though.
Yeah, if you want to go online, you can do that, by all means. BBC Devon is the website. Unfortunately, due to the Olympics, there are no foreign internet connections at this time, but certainly in the UK you can. And, of course, it's available on Listen Again as well.
Yes, I'm certainly looking forward to the Paralympics too. It's been a two-week hole in my life in between the Olympics.
Well,
and Paris.
I don't know about you, Alex, but I just thought the Olympics was brilliant from start to finish. Apart from football, obviously.
Well, yes, bother. Yeah. Oh, dear. Shut that out.
Excellent. Right, well, we'll leave that there, chaps. And thank you very much for coming along. Tune into the next podcast. I think we will be recording on the 8th, which would be after the Leighton Orient game. It will be live on the 9th. Do tune in. I tell you what we also need to drown out any future drummers that are coming down to the town. We need some new chants. So if you have any good ideas of some new chants, we really can't be singing Stand Up for the Champions for the rest of the season. It worked against Crawley, that's fine. But today, when we were singing it against MK Dons, it's a little bit embarrassing.
And on a point of order, we're not champions of League One.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yet, obviously.
Yeah, so that's what makes it embarrassing. So let's park that one until we actually are champions of League One.
In March.
In the meantime, suggest some good chants. And it can't be to the tune of Sloop John B. I'm sorry, I'm putting a moratorium on that. Paul Benson is in desperate need of a chance. So somebody out there, maybe Matt Kilford is a regular in our pod. You know, he's a musician. Come on, Matt. Do it. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.